that mean?
I'll be honest with you. It's a long shot. But it's certainly not as risky as attempting to defeat an entire brigade of the Peruvian army. That would be certain suicide.
Suicide or not, I said, I have to try to save them.
We cannot agree to that, the voice said. When we brought you and your friends here, we knew we were taking a big risk. But you did it. Knocked out the Elgen's largest star source plant, rescued your mother, and escaped. You succeeded. But there are costs to all success. You have to accept that.
I can't accept abandoning my friends. I'm going after them.
We forbid it, he said. Taking on...
I didn't wait for him to finish. I took off the headset and handed it to Jaime. Jaime looked at me with an annoyed expression, but continued listening. A moment later he said, He is not listening.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Over.
Jaime switched off the radio.
What did he say? I asked.
He said I should do my best to talk you out of it.
Good luck with that, I said.
But Michael...
I'm going to rescue them, I said angrily. Are you with me or not?
Jaime just looked at me.
Tessa looked down, avoiding my eye contact. My face began twitching, and I held my hand up to my cheek. After a moment I said,
Fine. Then I'm going without you. Both of you.
Jaime crossed his arms.
How will you go without me? You do not know the way.
I know the road is across the river. I'll just keep walking until I find it.
And if they catch you?
I looked him in the eye.
I'll tell them everything I know about the voice.
Jaime flinched.
You would not.
This is war. You're either my friend or my enemy. There is no middle ground. So which is it?
We are your friend. We want the same thing as you.
I don't think so, I said. Jaime sat thoughtfully for a moment. Then breathed out slowly.
I will take you to the road, and I will wait for you. But if you fail, you must promise to not speak of us.
Agreed, I said. I turned to Tessa.
Are you with me?
She frowned. I'm sorry. I can't.
Can't or won't?
She didn't answer. Angry, I walked back to the tent. Tessa followed me. She grabbed my arm.
Michael, I'm sorry. It's just... This isn't my fight.
How is this not your fight? This is your world, too, and the Elgen are trying to take it. If we're not willing to stand up to them, who will? The Elgen are big, and we're just... Us! We can't stop them. We can't even slow them down. You're crazy if you think you can take on an entire army. You're not Superman.
No. I'm just crazy. But they're my friends. And I have to try.
She just stood there, speechless and staring at me.
I don't need you, I said, turning away. I don't need either of you.
I got down on my knees and crawled into the tent. It was a while before Jaime and Tessa got in. None of us spoke. Long after Jaime started snoring, I just lay there in the dark. My stomach was tied up in knots. The truth was, I did need Tessa and Jaime. But most of all, I needed my friends. I missed them more than I could say.
Part 2 Chapter 7 The Surrender of the Magicians.
Rumors spread quickly through the Peruvian military force that the 8 teenagers they were hunting in the jungle were more than just young terrorists. They were part of an occult group called the Electro Clan, and workers of black magic, a rumor that gained credence when it was discovered that some of them actually glowed in the dark. Peruvian culture holds deeply founded superstitions, and even after the teens had surrendered, many of the soldiers refused to go near them. Others, in spite of their strict orders to bring the terrorists back alive, pleaded with their commanders to shoot the teens and bring back their lifeless bodies. The Elgen's elite Global Guard, who were consulting with the Peruvian army, helped spread rumors of black magic among the lower and more ignorant ranks of Peruvian soldiers, hoping that if enough of them believed it, they might pressure their superiors into turning the Electro Clan over to the Elgen, which was their objective to begin with. The chief Elgen officer working with the Peruvian military was Captain Welch, a senior member of the elite Global Guard and third in authority to Dr. Hatch himself. He had tried, unsuccessfully, to convince, bribe, then threaten the brigade's commander, General Panchez, into releasing the teens into Elgen custody. The general wouldn't budge. His orders came from the top. The Peruvian president himself had demanded that the Electro Clan be brought in for trial. The terrorists' capture had already made international news, and the Peruvian citizens demanded justice. In actuality, justice wasn't the president's main concern. It was his approval rating. With the loss of their electricity, the country was in crisis, and people wanted someone to answer for their suffering. Like all successful politicians, the president understood public opinion well enough to know that if someone's head didn't roll, his would. And the general understood that if the president's head rolled, his would roll along with it. Even though Jack and Zeus still wanted to fight, with more than 500 armed soldiers surrounding them, there was little they could do but surrender. Taylor was the one who had made the decision, waving a torn piece of her blouse over her head.
"We give up!" she shouted. "We surrender!"
A heavily accented military officer with a megaphone shouted,
"Just stand up now with your hands on your head!"
"The dude can't talk," Jack said.
"They're Peruvian military," Austin said. "They're not Elgen."
"That's good, right?" Abigail asked.
"It's not good," Austin said. "We'll find out if it's better."
Taylor was the first to obey the order.
"Don't shoot!"
she shouted. She put her hands on her head and slowly stood, followed by the rest. Austin, Jack, Zeus, Abigail, McKenna, Ian, and Wade. Once they were all standing, the soldiers quickly closed in around them.
"Now, you kneel down,"
the commander said when he was near. He was a stocky bald man wearing a black beret and green camouflage.
"Make up your mind," Jack said. "Stand up or kneel down."
"Just kneel," Taylor said.
When the Electro Clan were on their knees, two patrols of Peruvian soldiers approached them carrying guns and resat boxes. More than 100 soldiers held their guns on them, while the advance team, who had never seen or used the resats before, fastened the machines on each youth, including Austin, Wade, and Jack. Then their hands were cuffed behind their backs, and their legs were shackled with a 12-inch chain dangling between the two ankle manacles. Potato sacks were put over their heads, which was disorienting for everyone except Ian, whose vision was only slightly impaired by his resat. A long nylon rope was tied around all of their waists, and they were led in a single-file line out of the jungle to the waiting army vehicles. Walking roped together and blindfolded through the thick jungle was difficult. The chains between their legs caught on rocks and tree trunks, and each of them fell more than once. Austin fell the most, 8 times, leaving dark bruises and cuts on his arms and legs. Once they were out of the jungle, the rope connecting the teens was cut. Then each of them was taken to a separate vehicle, still bound, hooded, and surrounded by soldiers. Under heavy security, which included 2 tanks and more than 80 armed personnel carriers, the soldiers drove in a convoy 6 miles to the Puerto Maldonado jail. The army had commandeered the Puerto Maldonado city jailhouse for the purpose of holding the terrorists. They had released 12 of the jail's 57 occupants, then crowded the rest into 2 tiny cells so they could utilize the remaining 8 cells for the new prisoners. Then they built 3 12-foot-high electric fences around the jail, which were patrolled by guard dogs and more than 50 soldiers. The general had been warned by the Elgin that the teens had already escaped from 2 high-security facilities, and Pánchez was taking no chances. The young terrorists would not escape him. Upon their arrival at the jail, the teens were fingerprinted and photographed, then each was taken to a different cell. Austin was the first to be processed, and after he was locked in his cell, he sat down on the cool concrete floor, swatting at mosquitoes, rubbing his bruises, and grumbling. "I've never even been grounded before," he mumbled. "Now I'm in jail, and I'm only in the 9th grade. Austin had studied Peru in 7th grade geography and, as usual, had learned everything he could about the subject, including the country's history, Incan lore, the country's invasion by Francisco Pizarro, the current political structure, national exports, and even its national anthem, Himno Nacional del Peru, which he still remembered. He also remembered that the country reserved the death penalty for acts of terrorism, which frightened him, since the soldiers kept calling them terroristas. "We didn't do anything to them," Austin said, hitting the concrete wall with his fist, which he immediately regretted. "We attacked the stinking Elgin, not them. It's not the same thing. What have they got against us?" The cell he was being held in was a hot and humid 10 by 10 foot square, with rough concrete walls and floor, both of which had fungus growing on them. There were thick rusted bars on the window, which had been boarded over by the army. In the corner of the room, there was a bucket for a toilet, and a single naked light bulb hung from the ceiling. "There's got to be a way out of here. Think, think, think." He rubbed his temples, which always made him think better. "We've got to escape. What do I know about escape? John Dillinger escaped from jail 2 times. Houdini. David Hoodoo." 5 years earlier, when Austin was 10, on a summer vacation trip to his aunt's home in Las Vegas, his parents had taken him to a magic show, where the magician, the magnificent David Hoodoo, had escaped from a bank vault suspended 30 feet in the air. He had also made a fully grown African elephant disappear on stage. While the crowd applauded wildly at the illusion, it vexed Austin that he couldn't figure out how either trick was done. He had resolved to figure them out, but never got around to it. After he returned home, he was distracted by Shark Week and a new interest in robotics. "That won't work. The thing was staged. This isn't." He pounded on his reset. As the teens were checked into the jail, the Peruvian soldiers had removed their hoods, handcuffs, and foot shackles, but had left the resats connected. "Idiots," Austin said, looking at the box fastened to his chest. "They don't even know what the thing does. It doesn't work on normal people. It's not a taser. It's the opposite of a taser." He examined the box. "Wait a minute. Does this thing work like a taser?" He reached around and unfastened the box from his chest, which was no more difficult than removing a backpack. Red and green diodes began flashing wildly on the plastic-coated box, followed by a soft, high-pitched squeal. The resat was designed to activate if it was tampered with, but for a normal human, it was as pointless as trying to drown a fish. He used the metal clip of the resat's buckle to pry off its back, then set the plate aside and examined the circuitry.
Yep, there's the capacitor. It's huge. I bet it holds 1,000,000 volts. What's this? Oh, right. Of course. I bet if I...
It took him less than half an hour to figure out how to rewire the machine. When he was done, he held the wires 2 inches apart, and electricity sparked between them.
Mega epic voltage, he said. This will blow them out of their boots.
He thought for a moment, then said,
No, it needs to do more than shock them.
He carefully re-examined the circuitry. After another 5 minutes, he smiled.
So that's how it does that. Clever. If I divert this right here... Now we're talking.
He grinned.
Now I just need someone to test it on.
Chapter 8. Interrogations.
As soon as all the teens were secured, the army began interrogations. Taylor, who they guessed to be the leader of the group, was the first to be taken from her cell. As she walked, handcuffed, out of the room, she wished Michael was with her, then felt bad for thinking such a thing.
No, any place but here.
She was escorted down the hallway by 2 Peruvian military police who she tried to reboot, but was unable to with the resat sucking out most of her power, though she did get one of them to trip. At least she thought she did. He might have just been clumsy. She was brought to the interrogation room, a small rectangular cell with a 2-way mirror on one wall. In the center of the room was a square wooden table with 2 chairs facing each other. The chair closest to the door was already occupied, and as she entered, she could see the back of a man's head, or at least the Elgen helmet he was wearing, the ones the Elgens always wore around her. The soldiers walked Taylor to the empty chair, which faced the mirror. One of the soldiers pulled out the chair, while the other unlocked Taylor's cuffs.
"Thank you," she said.
She rubbed her wrists, which were already sore from the cuffs. The seated man looked at her for a moment, then said softly,
"Please, have a seat."
Taylor glanced at the 2 soldiers flanking her, then slowly sat down. The 2 soldiers left the room. The man seated in front of her looked Peruvian, though he was taller than most of the soldiers she'd seen. He was young, and under different circumstances, she might have thought he was kind of hot. There was a pad of lined paper in front of him with a pen. The last time she'd sat down with an adult like this was during her faculty interview for varsity cheerleader. For a moment, the man just stared at her, as if sizing her up. Then, to her surprise, he smiled at her.
"Welcome," he said.
He put out his hand, but Taylor didn't take it. He held it out for a few seconds, then cocked his head and put his hand back in his lap.
"My name is Caesar," he said. "What is your name?"
He spoke almost without an accent, and Taylor thought he sounded too pleasant for what he was doing. Taylor just pursed her lips and stared at him. After a full minute of silence, he said,
"Your name?"
"You already know who I am," Taylor said. "If you didn't, you wouldn't be wearing that helmet."
"That is true," the man said. "I just want to hear you say it."
"I'm not a toy," she said. She turned her head away from him.
"I don't think you're a toy. I'm just trying to develop a rapport."
Taylor didn't respond. The man looked at her for a moment, then said,
"You're not going to talk to me?"
She didn't answer.
"Could you please tell me where you're from?"
He shifted in his chair. When Taylor didn't answer, he said,
"From your accent, I am guessing that you're from the United States. Perhaps somewhere in the West."
"Why do you keep asking me things you already know?"
The man looked at her for a moment, then stood up and walked over to Taylor's side and crouched down next to her. He spoke softly, just above a whisper.
"You know that you're being watched and recorded.
I am not going to hurt you.
But if you don't cooperate with me, then they'll just get someone else who will make you cooperate. Someone with more forceful methods. Perhaps one of the Elgen's people."
Taylor still didn't look at him. "So, it's the good cop, bad cop routine," she said.
"Excuse me?"
"It's on every cop show in America. One of you plays the nice cop who acts like he cares about me, while the other plays the bad cop who wants to bust my chops, so I confide to the good cop."
He nodded.
"I see. Good cop, bad cop. I'll have to remember that. But this is not an American TV show. The Elgen Corporation is very influential, and they want you very badly."
"I'm not with them. I'm with the Servicio de Inteligencia Nacional. We are called SIN."
"You call yourself SIN? Is that supposed to make me trust you?"
"I suppose in English that it is an unfortunate acronym. But we are like your CIA. We collect information about groups that are a threat to our country."
She looked at him incredulously.
"You think we're a threat to your country?"
"You and your colleagues are a threat to my country," he replied. "So, you can talk to me, or you can talk to someone who is not me."
Taylor just looked at him for a moment, then said, "What do you want to know?" He walked back to his seat and picked up his pen.
"We'll begin with your name. What is your name?"
"Taylor."
"Taylor what?"
"Taylor Swift."
He looked at her coolly.
"Okay, Miss Swift. What state in the United States are you from?"
"Utah."
"Utah," he repeated. "Tall mountains. Who sent you here?"
"What do you mean?"
"Who sent you to Peru?" "Someone wanted the power plant destroyed." "Who was it? A rival corporation? A foreign military power?"
"It wasn't anyone. We didn't come down to destroy the power plant. We came down because the Elgen were keeping my friend's mother captive."
"What friend?"
Taylor looked down for a moment, then said,
"Just a friend."
"Someone we have in captivity?"
She looked at him.
"Yes."
"Which one?"
"Austin," she said.
He wrote something on the pad.
"How did you get to Peru?"
"We flew."
"Are you sure?"
She nodded.
"Which airline?"
Taylor swallowed.
Delta.
"We have checked the records of every airline that flies into Peru, and there is no record of you and your friends ever arriving."
"We drove,"
Taylor said.
"You drove to Peru?"
Taylor nodded.
"Are you sure?"
She nodded again.
"How long did it take you to drive from Utah?"
"A little over a week."
"Really?"
She swallowed.
"Give or take a few days."
"Where are the cars you drove?"
We sold them once we got down here.
He tapped his pad with his pen.
Are you sure?
Yes.
To whom?
I don't know who they were, just some guys we met. I think they were probably drug dealers because they paid in cash. They didn't want us to ask a lot of questions.
And where are your passports?
They took them from us.
The drug dealers who bought your car?
Yes. I mean, no. The passport people.
The passport people?
Why do you keep repeating everything I say?
I just want to be sure that I am understanding you. The passport people took your passport.
You mean the passport agents at the border?
If that's what you call them.
He nodded.
They don't usually keep them.
They kept ours.
Did you cross the Panama Canal by ferry, or did you just drive around it?
Taylor squinted.
We drove around it, then added. It was faster.
He nodded.
I'm sure it was.
He looked at her for a moment, then stood.
Okay, Taylor Swift. Thank you for your cooperation. One last question.
Yes, sir.
Do you plan on holding a concert while you're in Peru?
Taylor blushed.
But if you drove from the U.S. to Peru in 1 week, you should be a race car driver instead of a famous singer, because it would take at least 3 weeks if you never stopped. But what is most impressive is that you drove around the Panama Canal. I've heard of people walking on water, but driving on water is even more miraculous.
He leaned forward.
I'm disappointed in you, Taylor Ridley from Meridian, Idaho. Aside from your first name, I don't believe you've told me a single truth since we began. I don't think you have any idea how much trouble you're in. You've cost this country millions and millions of dollars.
Bill me, Taylor said.
The man grinned.
They just might, you know. The cost will be your life.
He leaned forward.
You don't really understand how serious this is, do you? You and your friends have been branded terrorists. The punishment for terrorism in this country is execution.
Taylor's eyes began to well up, but she didn't speak.
All right, then, he said, turning toward the door. We'll see how you do with the Elgen interrogators.
He turned to go.
Wait, Taylor said. I'm sorry.
He stopped and looked back.
You're sorry?
Yes, sir.
And what am I supposed to do with that?
I'll tell you the truth.
He looked at her for a moment, then said,
Will you?
She exhaled slowly.
I'll tell you what I can. I promise.
We'll see what good your promise is.
What I told you about my friend's mother was true. That's why we came.
Which friend?
Taylor swallowed.
Someone you don't know. Look, you need to know something. You've got the wrong guys.
You're telling me that you didn't blow up the power plant?
I'm telling you that the Elgen are the bad guys. They're not here to help your country. They're here to take it over. Once they control all your electricity, they will control your country. We did you a favor.
Taylor looked into his eyes.
I'm telling you the truth. We didn't come to blow up an electricity plant. We're a bunch of teenagers. At home, I'm a cheerleader. We only came to Peru because they kidnapped my boyfriend's mother.
Who kidnapped your boyfriend's mother?
The Elgen.
He just looked at her.
And why would they do that?
Because they were trying to catch us.
Then you shouldn't have come.
I know, but it was his mother.
He nodded.
So, did you find her?
Yes.
He looked at her skeptically.
And where is your boyfriend's mother now?
She got away.
With your boyfriend?
Yes.
What is your boyfriend's name?
She hesitated. Finally, she said,
Michael.
Michael what?
Michael Vey.
He stared at her for a moment.
I'm supposed to believe this?
Believe what you want to believe, Taylor said. But why would a bunch of high school kids come to Peru to blow up an electricity plant?
He crossed his arms.
That's what I'm trying to find out. But you haven't told me anything that makes sense.
I've told you the truth. You can believe me now, or you can believe me after the Elgen take over your country.
My country. Speaking of which, how did you get into the country?
She hesitated.
I need to know.
She paused a moment longer, then slowly breathed out.
There are people besides us who know how bad the Elgen are. They flew us down in their plane.
What people?
I don't know anything about them.
I'm sorry. That's not a good enough answer.
I'm telling you the truth. They only talk to us by cell phone. I don't know who they are. The guy calls himself The Voice.
The man rested his chin in his hand and looked at her.
You have to believe me.
The man nodded.
I believe you.
Taylor frowned.
You have to help us. The Elgen are bad, bad people.
He paused a moment longer, then said,
Thank you. I'll pass that on to my superiors. That's all for now.
He reached back and rapped his knuckles on the door.
Terminamos ya!
What are you going to do with us?
Taylor asked.
You'll be taken to Lima, where you will go on trial for terrorism.
Taylor wiped a tear from her cheek.
I told you. We weren't attacking your country. We were fighting the Elgen.
What you did was a direct assault on our country.
If they find us guilty, what will they do to us?
If you're lucky, they'll keep you in prison until you're a very old woman.
The thought of it sent chills through her.
That doesn't sound lucky,
she said.
It is, compared to the alternative.
The alternative?
The man looked her in the eyes.
You'll never be an old woman.
The man stood and opened the door.
Tráigame el siguiente.
Behind the two-way mirror, an Elgen captain lifted his phone and said into it,
4-2, Charlie Alpha, Vixen Omega.
Go ahead,
someone returned.
This is Captain Moyes. I need to speak immediately with Captain Welch.
Just a moment, sir.
A minute later, Captain Welch answered.
What is it, Moyes?
We've just finished the first interrogation.
Which one?
16. Terra's twin.
Anything interesting?
The most vital information we've gotten yet. The kids aren't alone.
What do you mean, they're not alone?
Someone's helping them. They're part of a resistance.
You're sure of this?
Absolutely.
Well done. I'll alert Dr. Hatch.
Chapter 9. A Clever Distraction. An hour after Austin had been incarcerated, a single soldier walked into his cell. Austin was lying on his back on the thin, flea-infested cot, staring at the cracked ceiling. The guard had no gun, but held a wooden truncheon in one hand.
"Stand up," he said.
"¿Qué pasa?"
Austin said, slowly rising.
"Stand up! Hazlo!"
"Okay," he said. "Don't get your panties in a bunch."
The guard looked at him without comprehension. 10 minutes earlier, Austin had reattached the resat to his chest, and when he was arm's length from the soldier, he tapped on the box.
"Can you turn this thing down? It's too strong."
"No. Put your hands in front of you."
Concealing the resat wires in his hands, Austin held his hands out. As the guard brought the cuffs near, Austin touched the bare-ended wires to the guard's arms. There was a loud snap of electricity, and the man collapsed to the ground without a scream. Austin looked down at him.
"I told you it was too strong."
Austin crouched down next to the man to make sure he was out.
"So that's what it's like to be Michael."
He carefully rolled the wires back, then quickly undressed the guard and put on his uniform. The guard was an inch shorter than Austin, and the uniform fit well, except for being a little snug in the waist. When Austin had finished changing, he handcuffed the guard's hands behind his back, stuffed the man's socks into his mouth, then wrapped a sheet around the man's head to keep him from spitting the socks out. He took the guard's key and bludgeon, peered out of his cell, and when he saw no one, walked out into the corridor. The jail was small, a single corridor about 60 feet in length, with doors on each side. Austin had no idea which cells his friends were being kept in, so he tried the key in the first door next to his, opened it, and quickly stepped inside. Zeus was lying on the bed, his face bent in a grimace. Sweat was beading on his forehead, stress from a resat that was set too high.
"Oye!"
Austin shouted. Zeus sneered.
"Eat my shorts, you ape!"
"I'll pass,"
Austin said, stepping closer. Zeus looked over at him.
"Austin? How did you—"
Austin took the wires from the resat and hooked them to Zeus's machine.
"I'm going to unfasten this."
"No, don't," Zeus said. "It sets it off. It could kill me."
"Shouldn't," he said. He set his own resat on the bed next to Zeus.
"I rewired this to counter yours. I'm 99.6% sure that it will work."
Zeus looked at it a moment, then said,
"Are you sure?"
"I just told you how sure I am."
Austin grasped the closest fastener on Zeus's resat, then unlatched it. The resat immediately lit up.
"It's powering up,"
Zeus said anxiously.
"I know,"
Austin said. Suddenly the machine began to squeal.
"Austin?"
"Does it feel different?"
"No."
"Then don't sweat it."
Zeus didn't feel it getting stronger. If anything, his pain was diminishing.
"I think it's working," Zeus said.
"For a minute," Austin said. "We've got to get it off you. The capacitor can only hold so much electricity before it will blow."
"Now you tell me."
Zeus frantically unfastened the rest of the clips, then pushed the box away from him. He fell back against the wall and took a deep breath, groaning in relief.
"You're welcome,"
Austin said, grabbing Zeus's resat and prying off its back.
"Thank you," Zeus said. "I'm going to blast those guys to the next city."
"Bad idea," Austin said. "We're still surrounded, and they've still got guns."
He yanked a few wires off the resat, then snapped on the back of the resat and gave the box back to Zeus.
"Here, put it back on."
"I'm not putting that on,"
he said, looking at the flashing lights.
"It doesn't work anymore," Austin said. "It just looks like it does. If you walk out there without it on, they'll know something's up."
Zeus slid his arms through the straps, and Austin clipped the fasteners back in place. He looked at Austin.
What's next?
We need to find the others. Then we're going to capture a few soldiers, put on their uniforms, and walk the rest of us out of here. That's the only way we're going to get past all those guards.
Do you know what's outside this place?
Other than like 10,000 soldiers? No. We need Ian. If there's a weakness, I'm sure he's already found it. Do you know what room he's in?
No. I had a hood over my head when they brought me in.
Yeah, we all did.
Austin walked to the cell door.
All right. I'm going to open it. When no one's watching, I'm going to cross the hall and open the door across from us. Get ready to run.
Austin opened the cell door a half inch and peered out. No one was in the hall. He turned back to Zeus.
It's clear. Come on.
Zeus walked up behind him. Austin looked out again. Then they both ran across the hall. Austin shoved the key in the door, unlocked the cell, and pushed the door open.
It's us, he said as the door swung open.
There were at least 20 dirty and angry-looking Peruvian convicts staring at him.
Sorry, wrong room,
Austin said, stepping back.
Attacken los!
A large bearded man shouted.
Vamanos!
Another shouted, rushing toward Austin. Austin froze in the doorway, paralyzed by fear. Zeus pushed Austin aside and with both hands extended, blasted the approaching men. The electricity from his bolt splintered off, traveling through all of the men simultaneously, and all of them fell to the ground, one of them grasping his chest. Zeus grabbed Austin and pulled him out of the room.
Wrong curtain, man, he said,
pulling the door shut. They went to the next door, which Austin, though still shaken and fumbling with the key, managed to unlock. This time, he opened the door more cautiously. At first, neither of them saw anyone. Then Zeus pointed to the corner.
There she is.
Lying on her back on the concrete floor next to the far wall was McKenna. Her back was arched, and her long black hair was splayed out around her. Zeus pushed Austin inside the cell and shut the door behind them.
McKenna,
Austin said. Then he realized that she was convulsing.
No!
He rushed to her side. Her entire body was seized, and her eyes had rolled back in her head.
It's killing her!
Austin shouted.
It's too high!
Shut it off,
Zeus said. Austin fell to his knees on the ground next to her. He fastened the wires of his reset to hers and practically ripped the machine off of her. She immediately gasped, then fell still.
McKenna!
Austin shouted. Zeus put his finger on her throat, then his ear to her heart.
It's not beating.
CPR,
Austin said. He began pressing on her chest, then listened, then repeated.
I can't get anything,
he said. Zeus pulled him off her.
Stand back.
He put his hand over McKenna's heart.
Hold on.
He shocked her, and her entire body jumped. He put his head on her chest.
Nothing.
He leaned back and tried it again.
Come on, McKenna.
Her body jumped even more. Then she groaned. He put his ear to her chest. This time he could hear her heart.
It's beating.
Her eyes opened. Then she began to cry. Austin knelt back next to her.
I'm so sorry,
he said.
I'm so sorry.
He wiped the tears off her cheeks. She looked up at him gratefully. When she could speak, she said,
Thank you. Anything for you,
he said.
We've got to hurry, Zeus said. before they find out we're gone.
Can you stand? Austin asked. I think so, McKenna said. Just help me up.
Austin stood and, taking her hands in his, helped her to her feet. After she was standing, her legs buckled a little and she fell into him. He wrapped his arms around her, holding her up until she could stand on her own.
Sorry, she said.
It's okay, Austin said. Take your time.
Zeus looked at them impatiently.
Not a lot of time.
We can go, McKenna said.
Zeus pulled open the cell door and looked out into the hallway.
It's clear. Give me the key.
Austin gave him the key, and Zeus crossed the hallway to the next door and opened it. Inside was Ian, who, in spite of the effect of his resat, was still able to see what was going on and was sitting up expecting him. Zeus waved McKenna and Austin over. Austin took McKenna by the arm and helped her across the hallway into Ian's cell.
I saw you do something to this, Ian said, touching the resat.
I can disable it, Austin said.
Then do it, Ian said. It's killing me.
Austin attached the wires from his resat to Ian's, then began unfastening the buckles. Ian slipped the box off, groaning in relief.
Thanks, man. I owe you.
Austin began dissecting the resat.
You're welcome.
And for saving McKenna. Ian walked over to McKenna and put his arms around her. After years of being imprisoned together in the Academy's dungeon, McKenna had become a sister to him, and he had yelled out for help as he watched her struggling with her resat.
How are you feeling?
I'm better now, she said, glancing at Austin.
Austin smiled, then continued working on Ian's resat. When he'd rewired it, he replaced the rear panel and handed it back to him.
Here you go. It's best to keep them on. I get it, Ian said, rebuckling the machine. Where's everyone else? Zeus asked.
Ian said, Jack, Abigail, and Wade are in the next three cells on this side. Taylor's in the last cell on the opposite side, but she's not there. They took her down to interrogate her.
Not good, Zeus said.
No, it might be good, Austin said. It's just the opportunity we need. We'll wait in her cell for the guards to bring her back, then jump them. But we still need to get the others. Ian, you need to tell us when to move.
Jack's in the cell next to us, then Wade, but we should get Abby first. She's in a lot of pain.
Then let's go, Zeus said.
Following Ian, they hurried down to Abigail's cell. Abigail didn't see them come in. She was lying on the ground, facing the wall, writhing in pain. Zeus ran to her side.
We're here, he said.
She rolled over to look at him, her cheeks stained with tears.
It hurts.
I know. We'll get it off. Come on, Austin. Hurry!
Austin fastened his machine to hers, and Zeus pulled her resat off. She rolled onto her stomach and sobbed, while Zeus gently rubbed her back.
It sucks, you know. You can take away everyone's pain but your own.
Are you okay?
McKenna asked, crouching down next to her.
I think these guys are meaner than the Elgin, Abigail said.
I don't think so, Austin said. I just think they don't know how to use the resats. Where'd they even get them? Zeus asked.
I'm sure they're a gift from the Elgin, Ian said.
You can bet on that, Austin said.
He stood.
We better keep moving.
Zeus cradled Abigail in his arms and lifted her.
Thank you,
Abigail said, draping her arms around Zeus's neck.
What's going on out there? Austin asked.
Ian said, There's some activity in the front, but we're still clear. Let's get the other two. Everyone but Austin stayed in Abigail's cell until Austin had freed Wade, then opened Jack's door, at which point the group gathered in Jack's cell.
Jack!
Wade shouted when he saw him.
Hey, man, Jack said. It's good to see you.
They guy hugged. Zeus walked in carrying Abigail.
What happened? Jack asked.
They had her resat set too high, Zeus said.
I'm gonna bust some heads, Jack said.
I'm with you, Zeus said.
Time for phase two, Austin said. Ian, what's going on outside the jail?
Nothing good, Ian said. There are thousands of soldiers. They've constructed three super tall barbed wire fences around the jail. So even if we get out, we'd have to somehow get through the fences. Then they've built their camp outside the fences, so after the fence, we'd have to walk through the middle of thousands of soldiers.
Yeah, I'm sure they won't notice us, Zeus said sarcastically.
They didn't notice us at the Star Source plant, Jack said. We walked right through their cafeteria. If we split up...
Abigail looked frightened at the prospect.
I think they would notice me. I don't look at all like a Peruvian soldier.
You'll need one of their assault masks, Jack said, and uniforms.
What we need, Austin said, is a distraction, and I know where to find it.
He suddenly smiled.
Oh, this is going to be good.
What's that?
McKenna asked, taking Austin's arm.
We're sitting on a powder keg just waiting for a spark, Austin said. The army took all the prisoners who were already in here and shoved them all in one cell, like sardines. They're as tightly strung as a banjo.
Two cells, Ian said. There's one near the front, and the other is at the end of the corridor, next to Taylor's cell.
Even better, Austin said. So here's the plan. I heard some of the soldiers talking on the transport here. They didn't know I spoke Spanish, so they weren't being real discreet. The bottom line is, these guys want us alive. Someone high up has ordered it.
Why?
Jack asked.
I don't know. Maybe it's for public relations. Maybe it's just so they can properly hang us, but whatever the reason, they're protecting us. So, here's my idea. We start a fire.
Wait, you want to start a fire while we're still locked in here?
Abigail asked.
Yeah, they won't let us burn. Then if we let out the other prisoners, and they see the smoke... Prison riot, Jack said.
And they'll have to come save us, McKenna said.
Exactly. Except that the ones saving us are us, Austin said.
You lost me, Wade said.
Jack, you and I will be dressed up as soldiers. We'll be the ones rushing everyone else out of the jail to keep them safe.
Only one problem, Wade said. How do we start a fire? Rub sticks together?
You're kidding, right?
McKenna said. Wade looked at her.
Oh, right.
Jack shook his head.
Dude, you're so dumb.
Wade frowned.
Where do we get two more soldier uniforms? Abigail asked.
Austin turned to Ian.
Are they still interrogating Taylor?
Yeah.
Are there soldiers with her?
Two of them.
Perfect. We hide in her cell. When they bring her back, Zeus zaps them and we take their uniforms.
Then we better hurry to her cell, Ian said. We don't know how long the questioning will last.
Let's go,
Jack said. He opened the door.
Ian, is it clear?
Ian looked around.
Looks good.
Stay close to the wall, people, Austin said.
They hurried in single file down to Taylor's cell. Austin opened the cell door, and they all went in.
When the time comes, Austin said, everyone needs to stand against this wall. We don't know how far they'll actually come into the cell, and if they see one of us, we've got a problem. Zeus, as soon as the doors open, be prepared to drop them. When they're down, Jack and Wade will pull them into the cell and put on their uniforms. Ian, you've got to let us know their progress so we can be ready for them.
I'm on it.
Then how do we get out of here? Jack asked.
There's only one way out of this hallway, Ian said, but there's a guard stationed next to the door.
Taylor will have to do her mind thing on him, Austin said. Then where do we go?
We go left, then walk straight out through the front lobby.
What's outside?
Soldiers. Lots and lots of soldiers.
Any vehicles nearby?
Ian looked around. A truck, two cars, a motorcycle, and a transport van.
Are there keys in any of them?
He concentrated on it. None that I can see.
I can hotwire it, Jack said. It will only take me a few minutes. Then what are we facing? Austin asked.
There's a single gateway that goes through all three fences. The checkpoint has three guards with machine guns, two more inside the booth, and a tank on the outside.
So we can't run it, Austin said. We'll just have to convince them that we're transporting the terrorists to safety.
McKenna touched Austin's arm.
What do you want me to do, besides light fires?
Keep safe, Austin said.
I'll do my best, she said.
Just then, Ian said,
They're coming.
How many soldiers? Austin asked.
Two. One on each side.
Where's Taylor?
She's in front.
Austin looked at Zeus.
Ready?
Electricity sparked between his fingers.
Born ready, he said.
Jack and Wade pressed themselves up against the wall near the door.
Ian, give us a countdown,
Austin said.
30 feet, Ian said.
25, 20, 15.
His voice softened to a whisper.
10, 5.
They could hear the sound of the key in the door. Jack glanced at Zeus, who nodded. The door opened, and the two soldiers pushed Taylor in. Taylor saw her friends before the soldiers did. She looked at them, dumbfounded, trying to figure out why they were in her cell. Then one of the soldiers looked at Zeus.
Surprise!
Zeus shouted, blasting both of them and knocking one of them out the door.
Too much!
Jack said.
Take this one, Wade!
Wade jumped on the first soldier, while Jack reached out into the hall, grabbed the other soldier by his feet, and dragged him back into the cell.
Sorry, man, Zeus said. Got the rush on.
I feel you, Jack said. I bet that felt good.
Not for them, McKenna said.
Austin pushed the door shut.
Ian, are we safe?
I don't think anyone saw us.
Taylor, come here,
Austin said, leading her by the arm to the bed. Taylor still looked confused.
How'd everyone get in here?
I let them in, Austin said.
He attached his resat to hers.
Let's get this thing off.
You can't take it off, Taylor said, pulling away from him. It goes off if you mess with it.
It's okay, McKenna said. He solved it.
Taylor looked at McKenna.
Then why is yours still on?
It's to fool them, Austin said. I disabled it, but they don't know it. These dudes don't even know how they work.
Then get it off me, Taylor said.
It took Austin less than 30 seconds to release her resat. When it was off, she fell back on the bed.
Thank you.
Now I need to rewire it.
Zeus and Abigail tied up the soldiers as Jack and Wade finished putting on their uniforms.
What's the plan? Taylor asked.
We're going out the front door. We need you to do your mind trick thing with the guards there.
Why would they let us out?
We're setting the place on fire and starting a riot. In all the confusion, we'll look like we're trying to get you